Spring is in full bloom. Are your finances? With the Chime Secured Credit Builder Visa Credit Card, you can build credit with everyday purchases and regular on-time payments, all with no annual fees or interest. With Chime Secured Credit Card, you can start improving your credit scores right away. Get started today at chime.com/build. That's chime.com/build. Chime. Feels like progress.
The Chime Credit Builder Visa Credit Card is issued by Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. Members FDIC. Out-of-network ATM withdrawal and OTC advance fees may apply. Terms and conditions apply. Go to chime.com/disclosures for details.
From Black Powder Headquarters and the Bojangles Studio at Three Falls Cabin in the North Georgia Mountains, it's time for O'Neill Outside. For anything in the outdoors, this is your source. Listen in and call the show with your comments or questions. And now, here's O'Neill.
O'Neill is out hunting this week. He's in the field. Scott Maxim filling in right here, right now for him here on O'Neill Outside. Taking your calls, 404-872-0750, 800-972-8255. And just want to let you know, you are currently listening to us on 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk, WEEI up in Boston, the flagship station of the Sox, and Coast to Coast on SB Nation Radio. And we're continuing here with our discussion today about what makes deer so good at picking up scents. We're going to talk a little bit in a bit about what you can do to help beat that deer. And trust me when I tell you, it's not easy. Also want to let you know that this program is brought to you by Works Tools, Real Tree Camo, Stripling's General Store, Tough Shed, CVA Muzzle Loaders, Snellville Heating and Air, Appalachian Gun and Range, Thiessen's Online Apparel, and as of this week, our newest sponsor, Rocco's Pub. We want to thank them for their support and keeping us on the air. And let's see what we got here. I've got about a minute, so I guess I'll get back to the deer thing for a second before we go to break. Real quickly, the sense of smell of the white-tailed deer is its primary defense. Scents determine danger for the deer, not sight, not sounds. The deer's nose, let's just be honest, it's a vacuum for scents. And moving on, you see a deer out in the field licking its nose. Do you know why it's doing that? It doesn't dig the taste, y'all, because let's just be honest, it can't really taste that good. What it's doing is it's actually moistening its nose so it could be more sensitive to scent molecules. Really? Absolutely. It makes it a little bit stickier. It makes them come on there and a lot easier for the deer to hold on to that scent. And along those lines, too, they also scents carry a lot better when there's a decent amount of humidity in the air, so that's also going to help the deer out. If you have a call, if you have a comment, if you have a question, if you want to tell us what you're doing today, here's your numbers, 404-872-0750 or 800-972-8255. You punch those digits in that order, you'll get me, Scott Maxim, filling in for O'Neill this week on O'Neill Outside. 2 hours of outdoor radio, one down, one to go, right now. Welcome back to O'Neill Outside. Let's go to the phones right now. I've got a guy that's been waiting here for a while. Well, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, he dropped off. Let's go to Mac. He's got a Lake Lanier report for us this morning. How you doing, Mac?
I'm good, brother. How you doing?
Staying highly caffeinated and very motivated, sir.
Yeah, you need to transfer some of that over here. I need to get some of that caffeine, I guess. Get jacked up here.
Oh, hey, man, it's called Pepsi Zero Sugar. It's got that black label on it. It's a liquid stimulant, dude, and it tastes like cola.
Just you saying that woke me up a little bit.
So what's going on, man? How's that lake looking? I'm guessing on this, but the weather's been shifting a little bit lately between cold and hot, and I'm guessing that's got the fish kind of messed up.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We're transitioning, you know, we're making that transition out of summer into fall.
Mm-hmm.
And now even fall into winter, and the lake's turning over. So we get a lot of changing conditions, and the fish are catchable, but the techniques change constantly.
Right.
And there's, you know, you'll catch them one day with one technique, and the next day you'll catch them doing something completely different. You'll go from shallow to deep or vice versa. So versatility is key. And it always is. October and early November, that's always the case. And we're very much in that situation now. And there's fish being caught. And that's the advice I would give somebody today. If you're going striper fishing, be ready to do a little bit of everything. You know, you got to be free lines, down lines, look for the schooling fish, trolling, catch the fish trolling. If the wind picks up like it did yesterday, that really influences what we do. So you got to be ready to counteract all those things. If you are have that mindset, though, and you work hard, you can go out and catch some fish. It's not bad. It's just be ready to change tactics at the drop of a hat.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, Mother Nature kind of is dictating that right now, and quite honestly, she doesn't know what the heck is going on.
She's confused, bless her heart. So
yeah, I mean, you know, I feel like I went straight from summer into like 2 or 3 days of autumn, and now I'm into winter.
Yeah, summer wouldn't let go this year, so that just kept on and kept on, and now finally we're going there. Now we've got a lot of rain in the forecast, and the wind's been an issue some days. Yesterday, the wind really dictated what I did and where I went. And we've got a lot of schooling fish that's been relatively consistent, but they're really difficult to see in the wind. So you might have to counteract that. I was looking at that just a minute ago. We're going to have winds, that east wind again, you know, 8, 10, 12 miles an hour, which out on the main lake makes those fish really hard to see, and it makes it hard to present a live bait. So for guys going today, factor that in as well.
And how does how's the rain affect the fish?
You know, I'm doing better on the days when we have cloud cover and rain as opposed to the real bright, high bluebird skies that we've got in a couple of days this week. So I wouldn't worry about that. And looking at the weather, we're going to get some rain, probably some course during the day, but I think we'll have a lot more dry hours than rainy hours. So it's good. Put on your rain suit and get out there. I think it'll enhance the bite, actually.
Oh, that sounds pretty good.
So, yeah, I think it's a good day to fish. I think the wind is the big variable. If the wind doesn't kick up like it did yesterday, I think today will be good. If the wind blows, it'll make it a little tougher on you. So,
I'm assuming you're hitting the lake today yourself.
I am.
Oh, you guiding anybody today, or is this just a little thing for you?
No, we're going to put the rain, get the crew of the boat, and put the rain suits on and get after it.
Outstanding. And let's say somebody wants to hook up with you for a Lake Lanier tour. What do they need to do, my friend?
They can call us at 770-271-0851, or you can find us online at CaptainMacks.com.
Outstanding. Well, go on out there and whack a few, man.
I'm going to give it my best shot, brother. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks for calling. Always a pleasure to talk to you, sir.
Have a good one, my friend.
You do the same. All right, y'all. Let's get back to the discussion about that nose and what it knows on that deer. And a quick review as we go along here. The sense of smell is the primary defense. Yes. Scents determine danger. Yes. The deer's nose is built for scent detection. Think of it as a Hoover. Yes. Deer lick their noses to actually enhance scent capturing capability. Yes. Now, moving on. What does that deer do with all that information? Well, it gets run up to its brain, and the most highly developed part of the deer's brain is the area that deals with scent discrimination. So it's devoting the most of its brain power to figuring out what the heck it is smelling on the air. Another thing, not much gets in the way of a deer's sense of smell. A deer can easily detect food sources located under a foot and a half of snow. And as a matter of fact, there's only a couple things that'll kind of mess with it, like an icy crust on the ground will prevent it from being able to find food, that kind of thing. It'll block it out. Also, younger deer don't have as good a set of smell, so they tend to miss things in those same conditions a lot easier. And the only other thing would be to affect it would be an environmental condition with very, very, very low humidity and moisture in the air. Okay? For deer, scents fall into three categories. The first category, edible. In other words, what's the source of my next meal? Oh, that smells pretty good over there. I think I'll go check that out. That's the first thing. Secondly, the neutral scent. And what might the neutral scent be? Everyday smells. What does this deer smell in the forest? Trees, dirt, bark, leaves, whatever. Think of it more or less as background music, if you will. If you're sitting there reading or something, got a little classical in the background, kind of the same thing for deer. And finally, the third category I call Danger Will Robinson. These are the scents that fall outside of edible and neutral. So, what are they? Unknown scents that represent a threat to the animal. The scent, once it's picked up, is confirmed by sight and sound, and then the animal will choose to either flee or ignore the unknown scent. source of it, I mean. Another thing, deer identify one another with a scent like a dog. So there's a common myth out there that fawns, for example, don't have a scent. Well, that's not true. The fawns do have a scent, and that's how does determine whether the fawn is theirs. They will not nurse a fawn belonging to another deer, or another doe, I'm sorry. So what they do is they sniff that little fawn, and if they say, hey, that's you, then food's on. And, excuse me, here's the last thing, and I think we covered this earlier. A deer will know you are in the woods long before you ever see it. With the ability to scent a possible threat at over 400 yards, between 400 and 500 yards, it's got a massive advantage over the hunter when it comes to detecting his presence. So, obviously the next question, what can we do to help ourselves combat this super sense that these deer have? Well, first thing, hunters, go get you a bath with some scent-reducing soap. Now, this stuff can be found online all over the place by numerous manufacturers. Hit Amazon. It comes up with a quick search. But, excuse me, basically, it's just a special soap that is, first of all, not scented, and second of all, helps knock down your scent. Secondly, wash your clothes that you're going to hunt in before every hunt. Don't reuse them. You've got sweat in there. You've got your body odor built into it. It gets absorbed by the fabric. All you're doing is setting yourself up for failure if you don't take care of this before you hit the woods. Okay? Third step, and here's something to think about. I call it marinating your clothing. Now, basically what you do is this. You take your hunting gear, your clothing, and actually even your backpacks or whatever you're going to carry, seal them up in an airtight container with some leaves, some pine straw, bits of bark, cedar chips, so on. Let the clothing absorb these natural scents over a few days before you go out on the hunt. What that'll do, that'll add a little bit of cover to you and help disguise what you're doing. Now, secondly, once you've cleaned your hunting gear and washed it, store it exactly the same way again after you're done. It will definitely help. It will help cover your scent. Here's another one, and I didn't realize this until I just did a little bit of poking around on the subject. Try wearing rubber boots if you have some. And you say, well, why would rubber boots be the way to go? Well, think about this. What do you put on leather boots? You put polishes on there. You put water sealants on there. You put whatever you need to keep that leather in good condition. What does that do? Kicks off a scent. Now, don't call me crazy, but even I can smell a can of kiwi when you pop it open from across the room. That deer is going to smell that stuff from a freaking quarter mile away. So, nah, don't mess with that. Nylon and other synthetic materials, here's the problem with that. They don't really do a very good job of shielding the scent of your feet. These fabrics, these materials are built to breathe. That's why they're there. You know, and yeah, it's a lot more comfortable in the summertime and in the heat, but you know, when you get out in the woods and you're looking to bag a deer, it's going to be a dead giveaway for you. So rubber boots are optimal. If you can make that happen, do it. Let's see here. Another thing we need to look at is, way over. Sorry, got to go. Hard break. Blew it. We'll be back to O'Neill Outside after this. Welcome back to O'Neill Outside. Scott Maxim filling in for O'Neill this week and taking your calls. 404-872-0750. That's if you're in the Atlanta metro area. 800-972-8255. That's outside that area. Give us a call. Be happy to talk to you. Tell us what you're doing today. You going fishing? You going hunting? You taking a kid out in the woods? You should. Let us know if that's your game plan today. Okay, y'all, let's get back to scent-proofing yourself, or at least helping to scent-proof yourself if you're heading out to go bag a buck. All right. In addition to scent-proofing yourself, in addition to scent-proofing what you wear, you should try to scent-proof your gear. Huh. Think about this now. If you're taking a backpack out in the woods, it needs to be treated the same way as your clothing. In other words, store it the same way, wash it the same way every time, just like your hunting gear, because again, it could pick up your sweat, your odor, and lock it in there. You don't want to bring that out back to the field unless you wash it. Here's another one that's kind of odd. Use oils and cleaners on your gun that are unscented because nothing stinks more than gun cleaner. That's just reality. There are numerous oils, cleaners, and so on that can be used on your weapon that don't leave a smell. In some cases, they're actually better at lubricating the weapon than a traditional scented lube. So keep that in mind. That's not a bad way to go. Keep the gun working, but also keep it from getting you busted. Here's an interesting concept. Brush your teeth with baking soda toothpaste. Baking soda toothpaste. Why? Again, the baking soda in the toothpaste helps knock down the odors coming out of your mouth. Your breath. Your breath, believe it or not, is one of the biggest giveaways when you're out hunting deer. They can smell anything that you've had on your breath, coffee, whatever, and it will get you busted if you are not careful about that, okay? Along those lines, don't stop at Waffle House for breakfast. Yeah, it's great and everything like that, but if you're going out in the woods and you stop at Waffle House, you're going to smell like a Waffle House. And all that's going to do is when the deer scents you, it's going to put it in its mind that it does not want to be around there, and it's going to go to Waffle House and just leave you sitting in the woods. So, you know, don't go get something to eat before you go out in the field, okay? Or at least if you do that, do it before you get ready to go out, and then brush your teeth and everything will be gold, okay? Snacks in the field, same story there. Look for snacks that have a natural scent to them, like nuts, raisins, Oaty granola bars, that kind of thing. Anything that smells like something the deer would be used to smelling in the woods, or that the deer would consider a food source, like an apple. They can smell the sweetness of an apple from quite a distance. So don't be bringing out, you know, an Egg McMuffin or fried chicken picnics or anything like that, because those scents will just chase the deer off real quick. Drinks, same story. Go with stuff that doesn't throw out a lot of odors. Water is obviously the best thing. You bring hot chocolate or coffee out in the field and you might as well just forget about it. That deer is going to say, I don't want nothing to do with that. That smells weird. Here we go again. Monitor the wind direction. Now, that's pretty obvious, and that's what pretty much every deer hunter does. But that's the biggest thing to help keep yourself from getting nailed when you're out there hunting that buck. Bug repellents. It's a little cold right now, but you might be in a part of the country that still is dealing with some insects, okay? If that's the case, there are spray options that are unscented. They will take care of business and not light you up to the deer, okay? In addition, if you don't want to do a spray on, there are proximity bug repellent items, like a thermocell. It's a small device that hooks on your belt, and I believe it's battery powered. And it has a little insert in it that kicks out bug repellent all around you, and it works really well. But it doesn't have a scent that'll get you busted. So there you go if you have to deal with the bugs. Here's a really interesting one, and it's actually obvious, but I don't know if too many people think about this. Get your gas the night before you're going out. If you're going to hit the gas station, then brother, be tracking all stuff that's on the ground, gas, oil, different whatever is on the ground, you know, windshield wiper fluid, whatever. That deer is going to smell mobile station and head the other direction, okay? And finally, one of the things you can do is use a cover, a concealing scent, something you could either spray on your clothes or hang in a tree, something that will help block whatever odors you're kicking off. So there you go, a few tips for you out there to help hide your scent. And the reasons for it, because that deer, that nose, has been made by Mother Nature to find hunters or anything that's going to do it wrong. So there you go, folks. 404-872-0750, that's the number. You need to give us a call. And 800-972-8255, that's outside the Atlanta calling area. Give us a call and let us know what you got going on today, okay? Oh, we got a special caller on line one. I've gotten word. Wade from Bowling Green is calling. You've been holding for a while, too, Wade, and we really appreciate that. What's on your mind today? Oh, no, it's not Wade. It's O'Neill.
Here's O'Neill.
Ha! I got fooled by the software. It said Wade, and then as soon as I hit play, it pops up O'Neill. How you doing, my friend? And
good.
Right off the bat.
Got a deer hunt going on down here in South Georgia, so I thought I'd give you a call. We just got up, and time to go to the woods.
Well, thank you for giving us a call. And by the way, thank you for letting me sit in with you this morning.
Well, you bet.
How we doing?
Yeah, lovely. We've got the deer located, and we've been seeing a lot of deer. We're just waiting for the I have a guest in from Panama City Beach. Her name is Tanya Higgins, and she's part of QDMA, the Quality Deer Management Association. So we've got her here, and she's going to go back out this morning, and she's got one located, and we'll try to put them into a show.
Outstanding.
You bet.
So how does it feel to be on the other side of that? I'm sorry, what?
She's quite the deer hunter.
Oh, that's excellent. So I got a question for you.
Go.
How does it feel to be on the other side of that phone there?
Relaxing.
Well, I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah, relax. I can stop talking and hang up when I want to.
Well, that's a little added bonus of being able to take a day out in the woods there, boss man.
Yeah, you bet. You getting any calls this morning?
Oh, we're doing great. We've been getting calls from all over the place. I thought we had our friend Wade from Bowling Green there when you came in there on that line. But, yeah, we've heard from our usual suspects. Matt called in, let us know what was going on with Lanier, and Don from Ocean Isle called in, and a couple other folks, too, man. We've been having a good old time this morning.
Good. I'm glad to hear.
Yeah, right on. And I've got an interesting little story here to talk about in a minute. Basically, what happens when you bag the buck of a lifetime that turns out not to be the buck of a lifetime?
Well, it doesn't change him. He's still what he is, whatever. But how do you mean? Tell me about that.
I'm sorry?
I'm saying, what do you mean? You think he's a buck of a lifetime, then he's not. How do you mean that?
Well, here's the thing. Now, I came across a story of a hunter out in Oklahoma a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And he bags himself what he thinks is a buck, but then he finds out he harvested a doe with antlers.
Oh, I've never done that. I've heard about that.
It is an extremely, extremely rare occurrence to bag a doe with antlers. And there's numerous reasons why that could happen, but generally it falls around hormonal imbalances and birth defects. So we're going to talk a little bit about that and find out just exactly what is up with a buck that isn't a buck.
Well, it's certainly not the buck of a lifetime, but it certainly is the doe of a lifetime.
It is, absolutely. And along those lines, antler does, I think, according to this article, I believe it was 1 in 10,000 does are antlered.
I have all of my time in the woods. I don't think I've ever seen that.
I'll tell you what, and that's the thing. And this guy's just all kinds of floating over the moon on that thing as a result. Let me tell you what.
I'll bet.
Yeah, it's even more rare than the piebalds, too.
Oh yeah, I've never done that either. I have seen what I thought was a piebald, but maybe just for a couple of minutes, fleetingly.
Right.
White spot or two, but not an authentic piebald. I don't think I've ever seen that.
And for listeners that don't know, a piebald deer is a deer with atypical markings. There's going to be a lot of white on that animal versus brown. It is in mottled patterns all over the animal, and quite often they have a white face and sometimes even a pink nose, but it is not as a result of albinism.
most people will shoot that deer immediately.
Absolutely.
Most hunters will take that deer right away.
Well, one, because it's actually pretty interesting as far as trophies go. I actually saw a piebald, a full piebald, on display at a store up in North Carolina, and it was just a gorgeous-looking deer simply because it was so different-looking.
Yeah, boy. Well, are you getting some fishing calls? Fishing should be improving.
Well, you know, we did get Max saying that the rain should help out a little bit with that today, and he's hitting the lake, but it looks like most of the rain's going to come a little bit later on, so early morning hours look pretty good if you want to hit the lakes here today.
Oh, good. Yeah, we got a wet range. Time to go to the pond.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, hey, O'Neill, looks like I'm coming up on a break, brother, and I already made Karen mad at me earlier, so I do not want to face her wrath again, sir.
No, don't do that. Just put me on hold.
All right, that's not a problem. We'll put you on hold, and have yourself a great day out there, and good luck to you, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, pal. Put me on hold. I want to listen.
All right, you're on. And there you go. So we will be getting back, and I will tell you about this deer of a lifetime that I bagged out in Oklahoma in just a bit. You're listening to O'Neill Outside. Come on back to O'Neill Outside. And Scott Maxim here, filling in for O'Neill this morning, taking your calls, 404-872-0750, 800-972-8255. Give me a call. Let me know what you got going on today. So, as I mentioned to O'Neill just a minute ago, I found a story of an interesting deer that a hunter named Chris Blades out in Oklahoma bagged 2 weeks ago. He harvested what he initially suspected to be an extremely non-typical buck. Okay, so obviously something's up. What happened was is that it was determined that the buck he thought he harvested was actually an antlered doe. Now, biologists say that this is an occurrence that happens about one in every 10,000. And for this reason now, hunters, you might be thinking, oh no, I just bagged a doe. It's not doe season. No, no. Don't worry about it. They got you covered. What happens is if it's antlered, they're going to assume that it, you know, you are going to assume that it's a male. So they referred to it as an antlered deer during the season. So you're okay. Relax. You don't have to worry about running and hiding. You didn't violate the law. Nothing's going to happen. So while it's a rare occurrence, what we find out here is that generally one or two of these animals are harvested every year. And I'm looking at a photo here of the gentleman with this doe that he bagged. And there is a big rack on the head of this animal. And it's covered with all kinds of velvet. So, yeah, a little atypical, definitely. So how is this possible? What would cause this to happen? Well, there are three basic ways that you wind up with an antlered doe. The first, the doe is actually a hermaphrodite. Okay? It's a true hermaphrodite, meaning that the animal has both male and female internal sex organs, ovaries, and testes. There are many combinations concerning the makeup of the organs and the locations of the body, but outwardly, they have either male or female external reproductive organs on display. You just really don't know. And you may know if you happen to notice that they have both male and female external organs. So that'll come into play. You have these other ones here now, case two. Pseudo-hermaphrodites, these animals are otherwise known as cryptorchid males. I know, weird word. Basically, the condition means that the reproductive organs are anatomically incorrect. So with this disorder, the deer possesses the internal reproductive organs of one sex, but external organs resembling the opposite sex. Okay? The extent of these characteristics in the deer can vary. Okay? Finally, the third category, the true antlered doe. Now, when you're talking about a true antlered doe, you're looking at an animal that has antlers that can be described as velvet-covered, pedicles only, small button antlers, small velvet-covered spikes with the occasional branching on them, hard polished antlers, okay, which you typically would see in bucks. But the size and characteristics of doe antlers differ depending on the condition of the animal's reproductive tract, okay? So as the antlers are more developed, what you're seeing is an example of severe reproductive problems the more you see. In other words, just the little buttons means, okay, it's got some problems, but the full rack means that this animal has got some issues. So that's the story there. In most cases, mature antlers are symptomatic of a hermaphrodite or pseudo-hermaphrodite, but occasionally you do wind up with that on the doe. So there you go, y'all. Another little bit of information there for you this morning on O'Neill Outside. And we're looking for your calls. 404-872-0750, 800-972-8255. And I'll be looking forward to hearing from you. Another thing to talk about this morning, and this just happened here in July, and pardon me while I call this up on my computer just for verification, but if any of y'all are planning a hunt in California, get used to a new concept, y'all. It is called lead-free ammo. In other words, if you're going hunting in California now, whether it's deer hunting, elk, whatever, you are no longer allowed to hunt anywhere in the entire state using lead-based ammo. Now, why is this? California, and initially it starts with them desiring to protect the California condor. I get it. It's a big animal. It's kind of rare. There's only a few hundred of them, if that many, still out there in the wild. We want to preserve these animals. I get it. I have no problem with that. Using lead-free ammo in areas where these animals roam makes a lot of sense. When you kill a deer or whatever you're hunting, you're going to have that bullet shattering on impact inside the animal. It's going to produce all kinds of little shards. And lead is a soft metal that breaks apart easily, so it causes a lot of little shards to wind up in the internal organs and tissues of the animal. When you gut it and leave the gut pile on the ground, the condors, of course, are going to come in and clean up behind it and eat the lead, and it's been found to harm the animal. Okay, that makes sense. But unfortunately, unlike most other states that have restrictions on ammo, California went statewide with this thing versus just regionally to protect certain animal species. And what that has done is basically created a bit of a, let's just say, an added expense for hunters and a little bit of a problem for those who are in the hunting industry in California. Experts have said that they could lose these suppliers and so on, these hunting outfits, they could lose about 30% of their business as a result of this ammo changeover. And why is that? Because there's extreme added expense when you're talking about this lead-free ammunition, okay? Compared to a typical round, it's about two times to three times the cost. Now, granted, when you're out in the field, you're only going to hit, you know, use maybe a couple bullets here and there on your animal that you're harvesting. But my concern, and I think the concern of all hunters would be, you want to take the animal as ethically and humanely as possible. You're going to have to practice with that ammo. Now, okay, it's going to, you know, the California has said you can go to ranges and you can use lead-based ammo at ranges. That's not a problem. I don't know if the ballistics are going to be that similar between the two. And I would only say that the only way to be sure with your particular weapon and how it acts with ammo is to shoot a lot of those rounds. So that's going to add some expense to you, and it's going to add some expense to the hunter. The problem with it being statewide is just, you know, it just doesn't make sense on the grand scale when you are worrying about animals in a smaller area. And what's even a bigger problem too now is that California has also said that it doesn't matter if you're out hunting varmints, coyotes, anything of that nature. So unfortunately, you're going to have to do your varminting with the high-cost ammo as well. So there you go, hunters. If you're planning on hitting California anytime soon, keep that in mind. You do not want to get busted using lead-based ammo in the state. So, hey, California, you know, that's your thing. Have fun with it, and we'll just keep doing our thing, and hopefully we can all work around this little added expense issue. Now, for other folks out there that are shooters, this is something pretty cool out there if you're just a shooter looking to try something different to bring your game up. And this will work for hunters as well, but only for practice, I would say. And that's this. I've recently read that there's been a new advancement in bullet construction whereby the tip of the bullet is actually aluminum. Now, why would you want a bullet with an aluminum tip? simple as this. The bullet shape is more uniform when you're using this aluminum tip. It is smoother. It is sharper, if you will. It is more consistent in the way that it is shaped from bullet to bullet to bullet. So unlike a lead-based bullet, or perhaps if you're using a 30-30 and you're using some of those poly-tipped bullets to put into the lever action, what this does is it gives a lot more consistency to the shooter. Oh, wow, calls all over the place. I'll get back to that in a minute. Let's hit the phones, man. We just lit up here within the last minute or so, and I want to talk to this guy right now because he's my other half of the fishing duo, Hank the Yank, the fly fisherman extraordinaire. How are you this morning, sir?
Good morning. You know, that was really interesting stuff you were talking about, believe it or not, and I'm not a hunter. You were talking about the getting the lead out. You know, a lot of our streams across the United States where anglers specifically use, whether they're conventional or fly fishing, they use lead weight to get their bait down to the bottom, or mm-hmm. in our case we use little split shot to get our flies down to the bottom. And many of the streams that we're fishing now, they've been asked to be lead free. They do not want lead in the stream, and we're using tungsten now, and it's a little more costly. But it turns out that it's supposed to be better for the environment. So guys are doing it. And that is becoming more and more popular around the country. So I thought that was interesting listening to you talk about what California is doing. And, you know, they're obviously always on the front side of these things, whether we agree with some of the stuff they do or we don't. But they are always, always on the front side of these environmental, issues,
yeah,
whether they're good or bad.
Yeah, and like I said, I do have a little bit of a problem with it when you're talking about varminting. It just seems like an added expense for something that doesn't really need the added expense if all you're doing is hunting a creature just to remove it because it's a nuisance.
Right.
I get it if you're processing an animal in the field and you're leaving gut piles, whether it be hogs or deer, elk, whatever. I get that. I understand that. And people can't always be counted on to come back and clean up after themselves. So, I mean, I get it. So
yeah,
we'll just have to see how everything plays out.
Yeah, you'll see. Listen, people are still going to hunt. They're going to they'll pay the extra expense. They'll get whatever, if they have to get a box of ammo or two boxes of ammo, if they're going to California, they'll deal with it. I suspect it's going to be, it's going to be a much bigger expense for those that live and hunt in California all the time than for the guy that just says, hey, I'm going to be in California. I want to go hunt X or Y.
Right.
You know, they'll bring a box and deal with it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, but anyway.
Well, hey, Henry, I have got about a minute left before I've got to go to break here. What's going on in the fly fishing world real fast?
We're getting ready to stock the streams. It's the late harvest starts in November. So there'll be the Trout Gods of Atlanta, our wonderful DNR, will be stocking all our streams here in Georgia for the late harvest. And there are five streams that's all, rather than put and take, it's all catch and release. And those streams will be stocked to the hilt with those fish, the Chattahoochee being one of them, and then a bunch up in North Georgia in the mountains. So that's what's starting there. The striper fishing on Lanier is just starting. They're on herring right now. I heard Max report. We are getting some top water, but it's a little difficult right now. You're still you can catch them on a fly, but for the most part, it's conventional. That fly bite'll change over big time once they get off the herring and onto the little itty bitty shad. It becomes much easier for fly rodders, which should happen in the next 2 weeks. So we're all gearing up for fly fishing right now in North Georgia. So
Henry, how can somebody hook up with you if they want to get out and do a quick guide with you, man?
Well, they can give us a shout. It's 678-513-1934. They can go to www.henrycallenflyfishing.com. And we probably got about a handful of trips left between now and the end of January. So
awesome. We're
booking up pretty quickly, Scotty.
All right. Well, cool. Glad to hear from you, brother. I got to go. You're listening to O'Neill Outside. Welcome back, y'all. Welcome back to O'Neill Outside. This week's Medal of Honor recipient, Private First Class Francis Curry, in the Army in Belgium, December 1944. When the Germans launched a powerful attack with tanks advancing to the 3rd Platoon's position, thereby forcing the withdrawal of this group to a nearby factory, Sergeant Curry found a bazooka in the building and crossed the street to secure rockets, enduring intense fire from German tanks and riflemen who had taken up a position at a house a short distance away. In the face of small arms, machine gun, and artillery fire, he knocked out a tank with one bazooka shot. Moving to another position, he observed three Germans in the doorway of an enemy-held house. He killed all three. He emerged from cover and advanced alone to within 50 yards of the house, intent on wrecking it with rockets. Covered by friendly fire, he stood erect and fired a shot which knocked down half of one wall, scattering the Germans. While in this forward position, he observed five Americans who had been pinned down for hours by fire from the house and the three German tanks. Realizing that they could not escape until the enemy tank and infantry guns had been silenced, Sergeant Curry crossed the street to a vehicle where he located an armful of anti-tank grenades. These he launched while under heavy enemy fire, driving the tankmen from the vehicles into the house. He then climbed onto a half track in full view of the Germans and fired a machine gun at the house, pinning the Germans down. Once again changing his position, he manned another machine gun whose crew had been killed, and under his covering fire, the five soldiers were able to escape to safety. Deprived of tanks and with heavy infantry casualties, the Germans were forced to withdraw. Through his extensive knowledge of weapons and by his heroic and repeated braving of murderous enemy fire, Sergeant Curry was greatly responsible for inflicting heavy losses in men and material on the enemy, for rescuing five comrades, two of whom were wounded, and for stemming an attack which threatened to flank his battalion's position. Private Francis Curry, recipient of the Medal of Honor, died October 8th, 2019. Wow. Let me tell you what. That makes me feel rather insignificant. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next week on O'Neill Outside.
Save a little more this month. Chime checking accounts have features like fee-free overdraft up to $200 with SpotMe and no monthly fees. Open your account in minutes at chime.com/goals24. Banking services and debit card provided by the Bancorp Bank N.A. or Stride Bank N.A. members FDIC. SpotMe eligibility requirements and overdraft limits apply.